Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of That's So Interesting, the podcast where we talk about things that are objectively interesting. No Brian and Graham today. They're off in Greece, exploring the world, exploring different islands with Christina. And I'm back in Richmond, just finishing up some final papers and final exams, wrapping up the school term. So that's why we've kind of been away the past couple weeks and have been pretty sporadic and haven't been able to record together, and it feels like a month. So I didn't want to leave the podcast without any content. I'm not going to record an episode today. This is actually something that I've been working on for school. It's actually another podcast that's a research coaching based podcast. So essentially I'm going through the research and looking at what the research says about certain topics in coaching. So the one I'm going to share with you guys today is different ways coaches can create a positive youth development climate in their sporting environment. And this is something that can be used by coaches at all levels. So my guest on the show, Coach Isabel Ormond, is the Masters of Coaching student for the Pandas basketball at the University of Alberta. And we talk about how we use these concepts with our varsity athletes as well. So it's not just youth athletes who can benefit from these practices. It's really everybody. And I think the concepts are applicable not just to basketball, but to lots of different sports in general. So yeah, this is just something I'm working on now. I'm probably going to record 10 different shows, 10 different episodes, and then release it sometime, hopefully before the start of next basketball season, so that I've done all the recording in the summertime and I'm not having to do it during the season. So that's the plan. If you enjoy it, let me know. If you don't, give me some feedback. If you have any topics that you're interested in or want to know more about, or want to tweak it in some way, again, always appreciate feedback, comments, that's so interesting pod at gmail.com or on Instagram at TSI podcast. That's all I've got for today. Brian and Graham are supposed to be back sometime next week, so hopefully we can reconnect and talk about their stories from Greece. But in the meantime, enjoy for today, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Get out there and play, kids. Okay, hey coach, my name is Brandon Brock, and welcome to a brand new podcast called The Art and Science of Coaching. This is a podcast where you'll learn about evidence-based coaching practices that are based on research and ready for you to implement into everything that you do in practices and in games. On this episode, we're going to talk about positive youth development, what it is, and the different ways that you as a coach can create a positive youth development climate within your own teams. We're going to talk about a lot of different research today from different researchers from across the country, both in Canada, in the United States, as well as from Europe. I'll link all those articles down in the audio description below. But basically, we're going to use what the research says, take those key points, and give you actual applicable things you can do to invigorate and inspire and engage your athletes throughout your practices. I'm extremely excited to be joined by one of my good friends on our podcast today, Coach Izzy. Coach, welcome to the show. Before we get started, I know you're extremely passionate about positive development in sport. We're both basketball coaches. I know you try and engage a lot of these things within your own practices. Before we get into the kind of the meat and potatoes of the show, maybe I'll get you to share a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you're interested in positive youth development.
Thank you, Coach Brandon. So I'm from Hamilton, Ontario. I played basketball at McMaster University, and there I spent a lot of time working with at-risk youth and kind of using sport as a tool to help them in their lives with what's going on outside of it. So when a Masters of Coaching opportunity came up at the University of Alberta, it was a great chance to work with Dr. Nick Holt in PYD and then also assistant coach, competitive team with the U of A Pandas.
Awesome. And you're continuing to learn and you enjoy it here and you're learning lots. And this is something you kind of want to do for the rest of your life.
Yes, it's been awesome. I've had a great experience. And I think the coaching tools that we've learned here can apply to a lot of different settings. So Absolutely. Whether it's competitive coaching or not, a lot of it's applicable to how you should treat youth and adults and teenagers alike.
Yeah, I know one of the nicest things about doing a master's degree in coaching is we kind of get the best of both worlds. And the program here is super nice because we get that application piece where you get to work with the Pandas and you get to work with awesome Scott Edwards in applying the stuff that you talk about in class. Maybe just speak to kind of the value of research and why you think taking evidence-based practices
from the research and from the literature is important and applying that to your coaching?
I think it's definitely important to balance the two. So before coming into this Masters of Coaching program, everything I was doing was based on mostly my experience or maybe what I've seen or my opinions, but that might not always be true for other individuals in other settings. So having a variety of research with a variety of different people done in a lot of different contexts really help you know what's best or kind of what's good enough and what you can do. And then it also helps answer a lot of questions you still have about coaching. Yeah. So even if the research doesn't answer it right now, ask it and like send somebody on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. And I wanted to shout out Coach Kelly for suggesting the name of this podcast being The Art and Science of Coaching, because I think that's exactly what this show is about. It's, you know, balancing and talking about the art versus the science of coaching. A lot of people say, is coaching an art or a science? I think the important point is that it's a little bit of both. There's the art, which is the application piece. How do you amend all this information to make it specific to your own sporting context? But then there's also the science piece. And you're right, it's not just about coaching based off your experiences. There are different ways you can educate yourself. And again, we'll talk about how important education is a little bit later, but looking at the research and being able to take it and translate it and apply these things to your to what you do is so incredibly important. So I appreciate that. Okay, so let's jump into it. Before we get started, I wanted to outline kind of what positive youth development is. I think maybe the term itself is a little bit common, but I think maybe what it means needs to be a little bit better defined. So again, a lot of stuff we talk about today, like Izzy and I said, it's not going to be based on our experiences. It's all going to be based on the research. And then we'll kind of share how we implement this stuff into our own practices. But a lot of this is going to come from the research from the articles that I talked about earlier. Okay, so to start, positive development is a strength-based approach to development. So rather than eliminating deviant behaviors or trying to correct athletes' behaviors, we're building on their strengths. Positive development and talent development actually go really, really well together because they're both asset-building, strength-building approaches to developing young athletes. One of the things that's really, really nice about positive youth development is it focuses on the psychosocial aspects and kind of life skills of athletes, whereas talent development is more focused on the physical side. So the skill acquisition, retention, kind of on the competency side. A huge underlying theory of positive development is Lerner's 5 C's model, which stands for character, competence, confidence, connection, and compassion. And those are kind of the things that outline positive youth development. One of the big things we'll get into a little bit is life skills and how life skills relate to positive youth development. Life skills are a huge component of positive youth development, but it's not the only thing. There's a lot that goes into PYD. You'll hear us refer to positive development as PYD, just the acronym. But it's more than just getting life skills from sport. It's about developing yourself as a kind of a whole person, engaging those 5 C's, character, competence, confidence, connection, and compassion. Maybe we'll just touch briefly on why it's important in sport to get those outcomes.
For sure. Well, I have a story if you'd like to hear.
Absolutely.
So when I was in Hamilton and I, well, again, was working with at-risk youth, that, you know, poverty was very high, drugs, crime, everything. So I'm running a summer camp and I have this probably 12-year-old kid run over to me and he's like, Izzy, can I borrow a pen?
Yeah.
Said, sure, like I take a pen and I give it to him. And I'm very sarcastic when I coach and when I interact. So I said, this is my only pen, probably had about 50 on my desk.
Yeah.
This is my only pen. I need it to be returned by the end of the day. Like, can you do that? Yeah, don't worry. And this kid runs off with my pen. So naturally, you forget about it. You go about your day. And then at the very end of camp that day, this kid comes back and he has my pen. So he goes, Coach Izzy, I have your pen, and like gives it to me. And as he goes to run off, it's like, wait, like, thank you for bringing my pen back. I completely forgot about it. That was very responsible.
Yeah.
Kid stops in his tracks among probably about 50 other kids running around, turns around and says, no one has ever called me responsible before. So this is a 12-year-old kid who must have been in school, maybe not on sports teams, but definitely at free programming, who had never had anyone tell him he was responsible.
Yeah.
And, you know, he probably shows up to school. Sure, he's making maybe some not great choices, but at that point, I don't want any 12-year-old to go through 12 years of their life not thinking they're responsible or competent or able to be successful.
Yeah, you're right. They should be able to have all of those things and develop all those things and be put in situations where they can develop those things. And I'll talk about being explicit in a second, but I think that's a really good example because the next piece I wanted to touch on was the coach influence.
For sure.
And, you know, we know there's a lot of factors that make up the sporting context. There's the athletes themselves, there's parents, there's the organizations, there's officials, there's the rules within the organization, there's societal cultures, money, you have media, you have social media. But I think kind of tying everything together and what makes or what has the biggest impact for athletes and their experience and their development mm-hmm. are coaches. And we know this, the research shows this, that, you know, kind of the greatest influence in terms of both positive development and talent development are the coaches in the situations. And that's why I think it's so important. I think that's a great story. And one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to share these things from the research, because I think the more people, the more coaches who are able to invigorate these things into their practices, the better off our athletes at any level will be. I don't want to belabor the point, but to talk about the talent development and positive development piece, you know, it's not just one or the other. You're not just developing PYD and you're not just developing talent. You can do both at the same time. And I think that's what a lot of people miss out on. And it's not just at the youth level. You can develop and invigorate and incorporate these teaching practices and skills mm-hmm. into workouts or into practices for any age group. Because at the end of the day, a lot of athletes are going to have a transition from their sport to adult life or whatever, just because they're going to hit the end of the road and they need to be equipped with skills that they can take from sport to the rest of their life to continue being successful. So the big thing that I want to talk about today was I went through the research and I pulled together a list of 5 things kind of from different research articles of practical ways that coaches can foster a positive youth development climate in their sport. I think we're going to walk through these individually. So we'll go through the list one at a time. I'll kind of explain the concept and then Izzy and I will talk about it for a little bit and then we'll move on to the next one.
Perfect.
Okay, so the first one, we talked about life skills not being all of PYD, but it's a really big component. And I think the first thing that I wanted to talk about, so number one on our list of top 5, or maybe number 5, it's not in any order. So the first thing in our top 5 is be explicit in teaching life skills. And this isn't just for teaching life skills. I think being explicit in the things that we do is extremely important. In a future episode, we'll talk about explicit versus implicit learning, retention, or the effect that it has on retention and transfer. With life skills, there's a lot of research that shows, you know, we can't just expect kids to get positive youth development outcomes or life skills just from being in sport. I think there's a kind of a misconception that, you know, if we register kids in sport, they're just going to automatically become better human beings because sport comes with all these things. And that's not necessarily true. There is a lot of implicit learning that happens. There is a lot of, if it's a team sport, maybe it's working in a team, that's not really explicit. But really, the research shows we need to be explicit as coaches and trying to convey exactly what we're trying to get out of our sporting experience. So again, it's not enough to hope that your program will foster positive outcomes. As coaches, there are lots of ways that you can go out of your way to ensure your athletes are getting the outcomes you expect. So for example, I was thinking about this. If you wanted your athletes to work in communication, you can be explicit in having them pair up with a teammate. So I would work with Izzy. And we would work on explicitly giving feedback to one another. You've given them an explicit task to do, working on giving feedback. And then the other piece about being explicit is talking about where that life skill transfers outside of sport. So it's not just, okay, you know, Brandon and Izzy, you guys work on giving feedback to each other through the practice, work on talking to each other, communicating, seeing what you see, and verbalizing that to your teammate. It's also about saying, hey, Izzy, you know, did you know that you can also use those same skills in the classroom when you're working with one of your friends in school, or you can use that at home when you're working with your siblings, or you can use that in the community or at your job. That transfer piece is the other side of being explicit in not only allowing your athletes to explore using those skills, but allow them to kind of see where those skills can be taken from sport and applied to the real world.
Definitely. And I think on that end too, it's important to label what they're doing with values or skills like from a workplace or into school. So using words like communication skills, leadership skills, initiative, responsibility, but things that they've learned in other contexts, but then now you're also showing them, they're representing them and practicing them in a sport context. So I think that definitely helps with their transfer of skills. and having a discussion with them on, yes, you use this here, now how can we apply it somewhere else?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not, you know, sports is not the only context where people can develop skills or life skills, right? You're right. They develop them in everyday living. You develop them at home, at school, whether you're in clubs, you're at piano, you're doing music, anything like that are environments where you can develop these skills. And you're right. It's about the transfer piece, because part of learning and part of showing that you've learned, you can either show retention through a test of some sort, or you can show transfer into a different situation. There's research that shows when you're able to transfer something to a different situation, you've learned it to a greater degree. And obviously, if you show transfer, you've also shown retention. So it's almost a higher level of learning. But again, that's one of those things where we just need to be explicit in teaching exactly or showing exactly what we're trying to teach. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. Okay, number two, and I know this is something you're huge on, but it's building relationships with your athletes. Yes. And this is something that I think is super, super easy to do, but I think a lot of coaches don't value as much. I go to a lot of gyms and I watch a lot of basketball. I see coaches, maybe they're focused on the outcome of their team rather than the process and task. And we'll talk about what that means in a little bit as well. But, you know, I think there's a lot of ways that coaches can develop relationships, and we'll talk about those. So the research shows that in order for your young athletes to trust you, you need to have demonstrated credibility and you need to show that you care about them. And that's so important. And we can do that by a couple different ways. So the first one that's recommended by the research is to recognize each individual's internal and external assets. And I'll talk about what those mean. So internal assets are those life skills, personal attributes, their physical abilities. So those things within them. Their external assets are their experiences outside of this sporting context. So their previous coaches, family background, socioeconomic status, basically all the factors that make them them. So what is their social environment? And then learning how to understand their internal assets and then how you can adapt what you do to make it work for them. So that's a huge piece. Another way you can build a relationship with your athletes is to organize team events outside of the sporting context. So a lot of the research shows that coaches with stronger relationships with their athletes took the time to organize non-sporting events, almost like team building activities. And this doesn't have to be outside your normal practice time. You can cancel one practice a month or one practice every 2 months, 3 months to go for a team meal or go bowling or go to laser tag or paintball or just hang out in the gym and do something else that's not, you know, your sport activity. It goes a long way and it shows kind of the athletes that you care about them more than just as an athlete. You care about them as an actual human being and as a person. The biggest thing to remember during these things, again, is to be explicit and not just planning a bowling night and then letting them run off and bowl, which is nice, but use this opportunity to program in some team building, program in some discussion topics, and then, yeah, some connection with your athletes. Make, you know, have these events with a purpose and involve yourself. So this isn't, well, it could be an opportunity for you to stand off on the side and let your team kind of work together. This is also an opportunity for you to interact with your athletes outside of the sporting context and in still a kind of team capacity. Another piece that was recommended to build player relationships is hold individual player meetings. These don't need to be purely about performance. These don't need to be purely about sport. Again, we're talking about building the entire relationship between a person and a person. So this could be about catching up, seeing what's going on in their life, how you can help them with school, how things are going at home with their friends, with their family, you know, just building the entire relationship and building a level of trust. I think this is something that's so easy to do. You can do it before practice, you can do it after practice, but it takes a couple extra minutes out of your time, getting there earlier, staying late, and I think it goes such a long way to show that athlete that you really care about them as a human being.
Just to build on that quickly, one thing I do is I write individual letters. So if you find you're in a team setting where you don't have the ability to meet with them individually, I take that time and write it in a letter. And then all you have to do is hand it to the athletes. And based on the previous relationship that I feel I built with them, it goes just as far. But as a way to kind of adapt to that time issue, a lot of parents have, especially if it's with a younger sports team and they're not driving on their own, they have siblings. So there's definitely ways to get that individual interaction.
Absolutely.
Even without like that extra time commitment on their end.
Yeah. And one of the things I really appreciated what you were telling me earlier this year is you write all your athletes a letter at the end of the year, mm-hmm. whether it's a follow-up letter from a previous letter you've given them, or whether it's just a thank you letter for your hard work, participation, and you're working with varsity athletes. So the highest level of basketball in Canada, and you're still writing these letters.
Yes.
And you're still getting the positive outcomes that you thought you would, even if you're doing this with youth athletes. So I think that's just a huge point that you can do these things with any level, any age athletes. They appreciate it. And ultimately, what you're trying to do is you're showing that you care about them as human beings, and you're not just their basketball coach.
Yeah, I think like a lot of, especially teams that want to be competitive, forget that their athletes are people. It's somebody's daughter, somebody's best friend, someone's sister, brother.
Yeah.
And we can't lose that piece of it because they might be at practice for 1 hour, three times a week. But then you do the math on that, like they're spending 90% of their time somewhere else.
Absolutely.
And they bring that in. So another thing, like with my athletes, is I try to have, well, I do a handshake with every athlete. I know a little something, you know, I'm still young. I can still do it. Head coach Scott Edward tries it. It's a little more awkward, but like I try to have a handshake. Some of them, I go for nachos with one. I go for lemonade with another. Like me and one individual athlete kind of have something that's our thing. And it's not basketball related. We can use it to talk about basketball if they want to, but to kind of touch base on everything that prepares them for that 1 hour they're at practice. Which is so important. If time is, you want them to be competitive in 1 hour, you can't be doing all that prep time in that one session, right?
Absolutely. And again, I think it's so important. You do this with varsity athletes, with adults.
All levels, I do, and they love it. Adults love it just as much as the U15s, the 7-year-olds, the 18-year-olds. And again, they're all kind of their own individual, and it all looks a little bit different, but I'm doing this with all Canadians.
Yeah.
So,
and it keeps it fun, and I think, you know, that's another great point is, as you're building relationships, it should be fun. Like, this shouldn't be a laborious process that you hate, you know, having individual meetings with your players or, you know, having team events because you don't like engaging with your team. Like, this should be fun. Do things that you want to do that make it fun for you, right? Maybe it's not handshakes. Maybe it's you have a running joke or you guys talk about TV shows or food, but whatever. It should be fun to engage with your athletes.
There should be something you can connect with them on outside of sport.
Yeah.
And it's not changing your interests or your values. It's just finding something similar. And it could be something as easy as where you're from or what you're studying in school, like having the same pair of shoes, anything to kind of start that and kind of chip away at possible walls they might have built up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The last point from the research is have athletes keep a journal. So journaling is a topic in sports psychology that holds a lot of validity in terms of a lot of positive outcomes, writing down thoughts, reflecting, introspection. And you can use this two ways. You can have your athletes write in journals and then collect them so that you have time to review their responses, you know, as long as they know that you're going to be reading their journals later on. Mm-hmm. Or this could be just a private task for your athletes. But it kind of allows them to reflect and write down their thoughts about what they're feeling and build a bigger connection to your team. Again, the relationship piece here is that if you have an agreement upon or beforehand that you're going to read these journals, then you can find out more about your athletes that way.
So, yeah, having a journal is huge. It also really helps for goal setting. And again, where we kind of go with this, if you're teaching PYD, you're not being competitive, but it is hand in hand. So letting them know how important goal setting is and then giving them an opportunity to practice it is important. And then they can see, this is my journal, like I'm writing my thoughts down, I can do this for school or for work or
for
wherever
sure.
they are.
Yeah, that's great way to tie back into being explicit, talking about transfer and then talking about how it relates to different aspects of your life.
Yep. And awesome. Then give them somewhere to practice it.
Yeah. Okay, so that's number two. So that's building relationship through athletes. Number three, this is another really easy one, but I think it's something that coaches overlook.
For sure.
Right? I think a lot of times people spend more time, especially in basketball. Basketball, I think, is notorious for this, but working on strategy and tactics more than your overall coaching philosophy. Again, so number three is carefully develop your coaching philosophy. Spend time and reflect. Ask yourself these questions. Am I teaching what I want my athletes to learn through sport? Are my athletes having positive experiences in sport? Am I properly balancing winning with athlete development? I think those are just huge, just general questions to ask yourself. But if you can't answer them, or if the answer to your question is not what you want it to be, then I think those are some things you need to change. At any level. It's not just the youth level. At any level.
This is any level. I was at the U Sport National Finals about a week ago, and we had this talk from Bryce Tully, who works with the Senior Women's National Team. So again, the best team in Canada for women's basketball. And he started off, I'm going to put Brandon and any listeners on the spot here, okay? If you ran into an old friend at a coffee shop and they asked what you've been up to without saying the words basketball, coach, or student, what do you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I would struggle to answer off the top.
Yeah. And
because you're right, that's... Go on.
Well, we forget the fundamental pieces of what we do because we're a sport coach or because we're a basketball coach or because we're an athlete, that we forget this whole value system and why we're doing it. And I think that's a great question to ask yourself when you're developing a philosophy, because it brings down pieces that, yes, apply to a competitive situation, but then also why you show up every day and why you love it and put in so much time and effort, a lot of it volunteer as well.
Absolutely. That's a great point. There's three big points that the research talks about when developing your philosophy. The first one, you want to consider the context of your sport. So a lot of times we're competing under the umbrella of an organization or an institution or a school, whether you're coaching high school or middle school or elementary school, whatever. That organization has a mission. Is your coaching philosophy in line with that school's or organization's mission? And I think that's incredibly important, because if chances are, if your philosophies are not aligned, you won't be a coach there for very long. You know, if their philosophy as an organization is to promote educational development and you have zero emphasis on your athlete's educational development, chances are it's not going to be a very good fit. So that's one of the things you want to consider, is the context of the sport. The next thing you want to consider is the performance demands of the sport. What is the commitment needed for your athletes? What level are you at? I think this is a huge piece. In coaching six-year-olds, it's important to remember they're not young, you know, they're not tiny adults. They're children. They're tiny children. The same thing goes with varsity athletes. You know, they're not six-year-olds. They're not seven-year-olds. They're not eight-year-olds. You know, performance demands of your sport matter. How often can you have them in the gym? How often is too much? You know, in future podcasts, we'll talk about kind of training load and training demand and a little bit of periodization in sport. But again, it comes down to, you have to understand what your level is and then what's appropriate amount of time to have your athletes in the gym. Because again, coaches need to do a better job of remembering that our athletes are more than just sport athletes. They go to school, they have families, they have friends, they have other load and stress that's being put onto them, and we need to make sure that we're balancing that as coaches. And the last piece to consider in developing your coaching philosophy from the research is you need to consider the developmental level of your athletes. Are they new? Are they experienced? Where are they now? And then where do you want to get to? The next piece, when you know, once you've developed your philosophy and you've considered those three questions and if you consider those three contexts, is presenting your philosophy to your athletes and your parents. Because oftentimes I find there's a disconnect between one of those two parties. Definitely. Either there's a disconnect between what you want to do and what your parents want to do, or there's a disconnect between what you want to do and what your athletes want to do. And this is something that I always struggled with growing up as an athlete. We would come into the team room, you know, I'll use my ice hockey playing days as an example. We would come into the team room, and the coach would say, we want to win. That's our goal. There's nothing wrong with winning. The problem I have is that he never consulted anybody on this philosophy. Chances are I didn't choose to be on this team. I got picked out of some draft or selection or team building process. Mm-hmm. And now I'm on this team. And athlete buy-in is huge. If you want your athletes to perform, they need to buy into what you're trying to do.
At any level.
At any level.
You cannot win without your athletes.
Especially at the varsity level.
Yes.
Like, you know, I would say that's even more true the higher competition level you get, because the more your athletes have skill and individual skill, and especially because they're coming in from a bunch of different environments where they were potentially the star, they were the best player, they were doing whatever they wanted to do. And if you have new athletes coming in to a new team culture, they need to buy into what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Any coach that wants to win, but thinks they can do it without buy-in or trust from their athletes, will not win.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, it's not going to hold through. And that shows up in playoffs all the time.
Right.
With teams kind of crumbling.
Right. And that's why I think it's so important to share your philosophy with your players or your athletes beforehand. And saying, hey, this is what we're trying to do. This is why. and then opening that up for a conversation. Does that work with you guys? And allowing them to think about it and come back. Because a lot of times, especially if it's young athletes, they might not know on the spot. You've had months to think about this and you're an adult. And, you know, they're going to agree with what the majority of the room says because they don't want to be the one standing out, kind of resisting.
Asking questions. They don't know what it means.
Absolutely. So that's the first point, is presenting your philosophy to your athletes, seeing if they agree, seeing what they think, giving them time to reflect on it, and then allowing them to come back, ask you questions, and possibly challenge what you're trying to do. And I think you should invite that, because the more they're involved in the philosophical process of your team and planning your team goals, the more likely they are to commit and buy into what you're trying to do. The second piece is parents. These athletes aren't coming to your games. They're not coming to practice if the parents haven't bought into what you're trying to do with their children. We have a responsibility as coaches to make sure that these kids develop, or these athletes develop at any level. The parents are the ones that are going to make them go or support you in that process of developing their athletes. If the parents understand what you're trying to do and believe in what you're trying to do, they'll provide the support at home in reinforcing those values that you're trying to get across to your athletes.
For sure. And since parents are playing that role in 90% of the time you're not there, it's important you both know what you're trying to teach. Because one of the most confusing things is learning something from either your parent or your coach and having that contradict the other.
Yeah.
Right? So you want that to be consistent, again, to give them more context to practice.
Yeah.
And like the same way you would hope kids can kind of bring questions and ask about your philosophy and values is the same thing you should have from parents. Have them, you know, give them the time of day and talk to them about what you're doing and why. And a lot of the times it might just be a miscommunication.
Absolutely. The next big piece in developing your philosophy is focusing on whether or not you want a mastery or performance-oriented climate. And again, this isn't a dichotomy. These aren't either-or situations. You can have both. And I think the best coaches have a balance of both. A mastery-oriented climate focuses on the process or the task. So this kind of leaves outcome, winning, losing, score, time, all that stuff to the side. Performance-oriented climate focuses on those goals. So those outcome goals and overall competence in relation to something else. And they're both important. You need to have both. But I think the art lies, we go back to that art and science of coaching, the art lies in your balance of incorporating both climates in your sporting environment.
Just give opportunities for both, because we're going to reach points where, yes, it's based on performance in life, and yes, it's based on mastery. So let them learn both.
Mm-hmm. We talked about internal assets. So that's point. So point three was developing your coaching philosophy. And we move on to point four. Point number four is all about ways in which you can further develop the internal assets for your athletes. So the National Research Council and Institute of Medicine in 2002 identified 8 features in sporting contexts that coaches can influence. We talked about coach influence before, that can help develop these internal assets. So I'll go through this list of 8 things. The first one is you need to create an environment and organize a structure where there's physical and psychological safety and security for your athletes. That's the first one, safety first. That shouldn't really be an oversight, it shouldn't be news. The second one is your setting must provide clear and consistent structure and appropriate adult supervision. So again, this goes back to your philosophy, knowing you have a plan and doing those things with a purpose. The third piece is you need supportive adult relationships. So this goes back to kind of the piece we were talking about earlier with your philosophy, is making sure you have a connection with your parents, making sure you have a connection with the organization, make sure you have a connection with the officials, and that the environment that you're allowing your athletes to play in is a supportive environment by everyone involved in the sporting context. The fourth piece is you want to create an environment where your athletes have an opportunity to belong. They need to be able to own something. They need to be able to feel like they're a part of the decision-making, part of the team, part of this process. They need to be able to be themselves, exactly. We need to create an environment that's inclusive for them to be them, to develop, you know, both on the personal side as well as on the sporting side. The fifth piece is facilitate positive social norms. So that goes back to incorporating life skills, incorporating that positive development, and making this an environment where it's about being positive. It's about going out and supporting each other. It's about respecting each other. It's about showing responsibility and having responsibility. It's about
support the positive aspects in their life.
Absolutely.
Like, we're all going to have negative things going on. highlight something great that's going on for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. The sixth piece is we need to create a setting that supports youth efficacy and sense of mattering. So similar to them having an opportunity to belong, they need to feel like they can be effective and that they matter in this space. The seventh piece is providing skill building opportunities. So again, like we talked about earlier with life skills, not just life skills, but any skill, is that they need to have opportunity to try, transfer, and see how it transfers. Yep.
That's your mastery and performance right there, those last two.
Right. And then the final piece is you need to integrate family, school, and community to create an optimal environment for positive development. So this kind of ties in everything we've talked about already, in that there are multiple contexts which make up the sporting environment. And we need to embrace the fact that these athletes are human beings and people with other things going on in their lives. And the more we can embrace and the more we can incorporate and the more we can talk about these different environments, the better our sporting context is going to be.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, the stronger your team will be, right? And
yeah, the more they're going to want to be there. I agree. I think it's like, that's just one of those things that's so easy for us to do as coaches. But because it doesn't relate to skill building or skill acquisition or strategies or tactics, we kind of forget. We
lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Right?
It's lost in the shuffle.
And even if we think we're doing it implicitly, hopefully kind of we're, from this discussion, we're getting that explicit approach, like go back to telling them why you're setting things up.
Yeah. Great point. Okay. Fifth, final piece in our top five is continue to learn. And I know this is something, you know, obviously you and I are both pretty biased towards because we're doing our master's degree in coaching. But it's been highlighted by the research that the most successful coaches are high in both experience and in education. And there was a study done with football coaches in 2007 that showed the coaches who had the greatest positive outcomes in sport had the highest levels of education, experience, and were explicit in the promotion of their athlete development. And I think, again, people overlook these aspects. You can't just jump into coaching and expect to be a great coach. Even if you're a great athlete, you need to take the time to learn, to experience, to try, to be in those environments and get better as a coach. One of the pieces or one of the aspects of why continuing to educate yourself is so important is that even the literature acknowledges this, your coaching philosophy will change over time. So we talked about being explicit in developing your coaching philosophy. That's going to change. It's dynamic because you're going to learn new things. You're going to see different things. And it can take a number of years before coaches get their philosophy refined enough to where it works for them. And that's shown in the research, in that young coaches are often changing their philosophies all the time and don't experience as much success. And that's okay. That's part of the learning process. But it's one of those things that with experience takes time. With education, you can expedite a little bit because you can go out of your way, you know, to engage in different learning opportunities.
Different conversations, right?
Like yeah.
That education piece allows you to talk to a lot of different people. I probably wouldn't have met Coach Brandon here, and you ask great questions to me and just makes you think about that purpose piece.
Yeah. Right?
And we learned in some research from courses in our master's was trying to be like a good enough coach, right? It's okay to not be the best. Is there even a best, right? Because yeah. Every situation, every individual is different. So how can you just have the tools to be the best you can at that moment and be good enough for your athletes to learn from?
Absolutely. One of the things that's underpinned this entire conversation, we haven't talked about one sport-specific thing that you should be doing in sport to invigorate your coaching. These are all things that don't have anything to do with sport
that
you can do as a coach to improve the environment at any level.
Exactly. And like, I mean, we're speaking from youth camps that we're doing or high school, elementary school, and then also at a competitive university team, right? And your team made it to nationals. You were in the final eight.
Yep.
My team will get there next year. so it's like an important piece everywhere. And again, it looks different, but allowing yourself to learn and continue that process. And athletes have so much to teach you. And even though they're not as experienced, they're not as educated, and they're not coaches, learn something from your athletes and let them know you're teaching them. And that'll help build that relationship and kind of their assets that we've talked about this whole time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to touch on that education piece. So the research identifies three kind of different areas of education. There's formal, there's non-formal, and there's informal. You highlighted a great example of kind of those informal conversations that we have. So informal learning is described as the outside learning experiences. So life experiences, conversations, talking about concepts. These are things that you can go out of your way and organize on your own, whether it's, you know, organizing a Sunday coaches conversation where you guys go to a local coffee shop and, you know, your coaching friends from around the city come together and you just talk about things. You have formal areas of education. These are kind of your standardized coaching education courses. So in Canada, this is your National Coaching Certification Program, your NCCP. Some universities have physical activity courses that are focused on coaching. You can do, like Coach Izzy and I are doing, you can do your master's degree in coaching. You can do kind of graduate level courses.
Mentorship programs,
certificate programs. There's the NCI, which is the National Coaching Institute in Canada, which is a formal learning process where you can go and get formal coaching education and experience. And then the third piece is you have your non-formal learning context. So these are like coaching conferences, seminars, one-off type classes. If you're in Canada, the NCCP offers a lot of these types of courses, but these are just kind of general 2-hour lectures, seminars, meetings.
Some of them are on court too.
Some of them are on court. Some of them are online. You can find them everywhere. I think coach education is out there. I think more people just need to realize it's out there and then access those things. I think the other piece to remember is that none of these things are better than the other. I think that's one of the things that gets lost in kind of the fray, in that we rank formal learning opportunities like a degree as better than learning within a conversation. And I think there's inherent value to each of those things. Obviously, when you get a degree, a master's degree or an undergraduate degree, there's something physical to show that you've gone through this formal learning process. But there's obviously something to be said about always asking questions and always learning from different coaches in an informal conversational piece. And it doesn't make you a worse off coach, but I think again, it's all about balance. It's about striking the balance between learning from all three of these different types of contexts.
Yeah, and I mean, that directly applies to the PYD that we're telling youth and athletes, right? Is that it's in multiple contexts. And if you practice something in a sports setting, or in our case, a classroom setting while we do our masters, that applies to when you're going out for a bite to eat with a bunch of coaches, or when you're riding the train to practice with another athlete, like having those discussions and understanding those are learning opportunities for you.
100%. Absolutely. So that's our fifth and final piece, continuing to learn, continuing education. And I think that's one of the things, if you read any book from any coach, they're always going to say they pride themselves on being some sort of lifelong learner, or continuing to learn, or always wanting to learn. Or, you know, one of the ways they got to where they were is because they kept asking questions and they kept bothering other coaches who were experienced and learning from them, or going to coaching courses or seminars. You know, you can never say that as a coach, you know everything there is to know. I think if you find yourself saying that, I think it's important to take some time, stop and reflect and understand that there's just no way that you can know everything there is to know about coaching, because you're working with human beings and humans are dynamic. The sport is dynamic, and sports are always changing, and the environments are always changing, and what takes to win is always changing, and the science is always changing. And that's why I think it's important to take some time to review the science or find ways to learn from the science, like listening to this podcast. You don't have to go out and read the journal articles. I'm going to do that for you and then talk about it and report the evidence back to you. The final thing we want to talk about is our last segment called The Play is Under Review.
Woo!
I think it's important to talk about the current limitations with research. So it's important to understand that, you know, these research findings were not all developed within one sporting context. They're developed within multiple sporting contexts, multiple sports, different team, different individuals. I think where the art of coaching comes in is taking this science and finding unique ways to incorporate it into your own sporting context. The other thing is that there's still a lot of stuff we don't know about coaching. And there's a lot of stuff in the literature we don't know about creating a positive youth development climate. We talked about implicit learning and explicit learning a little bit before. We know in motor learning, implicit learning is shown to be more reliable. It has better transfer. It has better retention as opposed to explicit learning. You know, we spent this whole podcast talking about explicit learning. I think there's probably still a lot of research to be done with life skills and positive development and learning psychosocial outcomes from an implicit learning context and what that means for transferring outside of sport. We're just starting to crack the surface on that. And those one of those things that You know, we're always learning. We're continuing to discover. We're continuing to learn. And it's important to understand that, you know, just because you've learned a whole lot of stuff from today, this stuff could change and best practices can change. But I think that's part of the continuing to educate yourself piece, is continuing to learn and continuing to learn new things. And stuff from the 70s doesn't apply today. Like, so much has changed. And it's about being excited and continuing to invigorate the things that you do.
Yeah, and I think for anyone that is listening to this and hopefully follows up with other episodes, this is a great step to start that curiosity and start that passion and start asking questions and send things in that you want talked about. It's great to have a resource of someone that will go through research for you that's been done or not and try to help you answer stuff. And to this day, I ask professors or other coaches what they're doing and why and try to find an answer.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. I mean, I know what I'm interested in, but if you tell me what you're interested in as a coach, then it gives me a kind of a direction to go and look at and answer questions. Future things I want to talk about, you know, again, implicit versus explicit learning. I want to talk about blocked versus random practice. I want to talk about periodization in sport. I want to talk about coaches' influence on athlete burnout. I want to talk about coach burnout. I want to talk about a lot of different things, but of course, these are interesting to me. If they're not interesting to you, then it won't be as effective as a knowledge translation tool. So there are lots of ways to get in touch. Any final notes, key takeaways from you?
Well, thank you for having me. I always love a good discussion on coaching and the art and science of coaching from both ends of it. And I really appreciate having people listen to it and engage in it, because that builds our community and that builds how we're able to support athletes, kids, young adults through this crazy world, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, ultimately, you're right. It's a conversation. Coaching is a conversation, and the more people we have involved in the conversation and the more we share our ideas and thoughts and knowledge and experience, the better off everyone's going to be, the better off our sport's going to be, the better off our athletes are going to be, and ultimately that's the goal. All right, I just wanted to say thanks again for listening. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and we know as coaches, your time is extremely valuable, so I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this one. If you want to learn more about the research that we've talked about today, I'll put all those links down in the podcast description. And anything else you might need, you want to know, send us an email and find out and ask. Once again, signing off.
Thanks for listening.